Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. The first abstract is a late breaker article by Stefan et al. Entitled "The Impact of Restrictive Transfusion Practices on Hemodynamically Stable Critically Ill Children Without Heart Disease: A Secondary Analysis of the Age of Blood in Children in the PICU Trial." Objectives. Guidelines recommend against red blood cell transfusion in hemodynamically stable children without cardiac disease if hemoglobin is greater than or equal to 7 grams per deciliter. We sought to assess the clinical and economic impact of compliance with the red blood cell transfusion guidelines. Design. A non-pre-specified secondary analysis of non-cardiac hemodynamically stable patients in the randomized trial Age of Blood in Children in PICUs. Costs analyzed included ICU stay and physician fees. Stabilized inverse propensity for treatment weighting was used to create a cohort balanced with respect to potential confounding variables. Weighted regression models were fit to evaluate outcomes based on guideline compliance. Setting: 50 international tertiary care centers. Patients: critically ill children 3 days to 16 years old transfused with red blood cells at less than or equal to 7 days of ICU admission. 687 subjects who met eligibility criteria were included in the analysis. Interventions. Initial red blood cell transfusions administered when hemoglobin was less than 7 grams per deciliter were considered compliant or non-compliant if hemoglobin was greater than or equal to 7 grams per deciliter. Measurements and main results. Frequency of new or progressive multiple organ system dysfunction, ICU survival, and associated costs. The hypothesis was formulated after data collection, but exposure groups were masked until completion of planned analyses. 49% of patients received a non-compliant initial transfusion. Weighted cohorts were balanced with respect to confounding variables, with absolute standardized differences less than 0.1. No differences were noted in new or progressive multiple organ system dysfunction frequency, with a relative risk of 0.86 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.61 to 1.22 and a p-value equal to 0.4. Patients receiving compliant transfusions had more ICU-free days, with a mean difference of 1.73 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.57 to 2.88 and a p-value equal to 0.003. Compliance reduced mean costs in the ICU by $38,845 per patient, with a 95% confidence interval of $12,641 to $65,048. Conclusions. Deferring transfusion until hemoglobin is less than 7 grams per deciliter is not associated with increased organ dysfunction in this population, but is independently associated with increased likelihood of live ICU discharge and lower ICU costs. Abstract 2 is another late breaker article by White, Nesfield et al. Pediatric Critical Care Associated Parental Traumatic Stress, Beyond the First Year. Objectives. Perform a longitudinal analysis of parental traumatic stress up to 30 months after PICU discharge. Design: prospective observational cohort study. Setting: 2 tertiary care children's hospitals with mixed medical surgical cardiac PICUs. Subjects: parents of patients unexpectedly admitted to the PICU. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 265 parents of 188 children were enrolled. Of the 195 parents who completed the 3 to 9 month assessments, 29, or 14.8%, met post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD qualification on the PTSD symptom scale interview for DSM-5. Multivariable analysis showed parents had increased odds of developing parental PTSD if they met any of the following. Parents who met acute stress disorder qualification with an odds ratio of 8.01 and a 95% confidence interval of 2.64 to 24.3, parents of children with pediatric overall performance category score of severe or coma at discharge with an odds ratio of 5.21 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.65 to 16.4, parents who had concerns for their child's permanent injury with an odds ratio of 1.82 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.36 to 2.43, and parents who reported increased knowledge of child illness during admission, with an odds ratio of 1.82 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.13 to 2.93. Of the 175 parents, or 66%, who completed the 18 to 30 month assessments, 22, or 12.5%, met PTSD qualification. Of these assessments, there were increased odds of developing parental PTSD if they met any of the following. Parents who met acute stress disorder qualification had an odds ratio of 4.19 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.12 to 15.7. Parents who had a history of a family member or themselves being admitted to the ICU with an odds ratio of 6.51 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.43 to 29.6. And parents who had concerns of child susceptibility to death post-discharge with an odds ratio of 1.58 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.19 to 2.09. At 18 to 30 months post-discharge, parents who met the PTSD qualification were more likely to report a decrease in household income following discharge, with an odds ratio of 9.23 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.71 to 49.9. Conclusions. Parental PTSD remains a significant morbidity of PICU admissions for a subgroup of parents greater than 18 months post-admission. Identifiable risk factors will inform the development of targeted interventions. Abstract 3 is a feature article by Mao et al. Critical Care and Mechanical Ventilation Practices Surrounding Liver Transplantation in Children, a Multicenter Collaborative. Objectives. We aim to determine which characteristics and management approaches were associated with postoperative invasive mechanical ventilation and with a prolonged course of invasive mechanical ventilation in children post-liver transplant, as well as describing the utilization of critical care resources. Design. Retrospective multicenter cohort study of children who underwent an isolated liver transplantation between January 2017 and December 2018. Setting. 12 U.S. pediatric liver transplant centers. Patients. 330 children post-liver transplant admitted to the ICU. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 6 patients died in our cohort. The median length of PICU stay was 4.5 days, with an interquartile range of 2.9 to 8.2 days. 96% of patients were initially monitored with arterial catheters, 95% were monitored with central venous pressures, and 93% were monitored with liver ultrasound. Commonly used therapies in the first 7 days were anticoagulation in 80%, blood product administration in 52.4%, and vasoactive agents in 23%. In multivariable logistic regression analysis, age, open fascia, large center size, and higher model for end-stage liver disease and pediatric end-stage liver disease scores were associated with postoperative invasive mechanical ventilation. Age had an adjusted odds ratio of 0.9 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.86 to 0.95. Open fascia had an adjusted odds ratio of 7 with a 95% confidence interval of 2.6 to 18.9. Large center size had an adjusted odds ratio of 4.3 with a 95% confidence interval of 2.2 to 8.3, and model for end-stage liver disease and pediatric end-stage liver disease scores had an adjusted odds ratio of 1.04 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.01 to 1.06. In multivariable logistic regression analysis, postoperative day zero peak inspiratory pressure, large center size, and age were associated with length of invasive mechanical ventilation greater than 24 hours. Postoperative day zero peak inspiratory pressure had an adjusted odds ratio of 1.2 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.1 to 1.3. Large center size had an adjusted odds ratio of 2.9 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.6 to 5.4. And age had an adjusted odds ratio of 0.89 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.85 to 0.95. Length of invasive mechanical ventilation greater than 24 hours was associated with bleeding complications with a p-value of 0.03, infections with a p-value of 0.03, graft loss with a p-value of 0.02, and reoperation with a p-value of 0.03. Conclusions. Younger age, preoperative hospitalization, large center size, and open fascia are associated with use of invasive mechanical ventilation, and younger age, large center size, and postoperative day zero peak inspiratory pressures are associated with prolonged invasive mechanical ventilation on multivariable analysis. Longer invasive mechanical ventilation is associated with negative outcomes, making it an important clinical marker. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation article by Wang et al. Protocol-driven initiation and weaning of high-flow nasal cannula for patients with bronchiolitis, a quality improvement initiative. Objectives. Bronchiolitis is the most common cause for non-elective infant hospitalization in the United States, with increasing utilization of high-flow nasal cannula. We standardized initiation and weaning of high-flow nasal cannula for bronchiolitis and quantified the impact on outcomes. Our specific aim was to reduce hospital and ICU length of stay by 10% between two bronchiolitis seasons after implementation. Design. A quality improvement project using statistical process control methodology. Setting. Tertiary care children's hospital with 24 PICU and 48 acute care pediatric beds. Patients. Children less than 24 months old with bronchiolitis without other respiratory diagnoses or underlying cardiac, respiratory, or neuromuscular disorders between the baseline range of December 2017 and November 2018 and the post-intervention range between December 2018 and February 2020. Interventions. Interventions included development of a high-flow nasal cannula protocol with initiation and weaning guidelines, modification of protocol and respiratory assessment classification, education, and quality improvement rounds with a focus on efficient high-flow nasal cannula weaning, transfer, and/or discharge. Measurements and main results. A total of 223 children were included, 96 baseline and 127 post-intervention. The primary outcome metric, average length of stay per patient, decreased from 4 to 2.8 days, and the average ICU length of stay per patient decreased from 2.8 to 1.9 days. The secondary outcome metric, average high-flow nasal cannula treatment hours per patient, decreased from 44 to 36.3 hours. The primary and secondary outcomes met criteria for special cause variation. Balancing measures included ICU readmission rates, 30-day readmission rates, and adverse events, which were not different between the two periods. Conclusions. A standardized protocol for high-flow nasal cannula management for patients with bronchiolitis was associated with decreased hospital and ICU length of stay, less time on high-flow nasal cannula, and no difference in readmissions or adverse events. Abstract 5 is a review article by Bogie et al. Non-invasive ventilation for acute respiratory failure in pediatric patients, a systematic review and meta-analysis. Objective: to perform a systematic review and meta-analysis of randomized control trials on the use of non-invasive ventilation for acute respiratory failure in pediatric patients. Data sources: we searched PubMed, Embase, the Cochrane Central Register of Clinical Trials, and clinicaltrials.gov with a last update on July 31, 2022. Study selection. We included randomized controlled trials comparing non-invasive ventilation with any comparator, including standard oxygen therapy and high-flow nasal cannula in pediatric patients with acute respiratory failure. We excluded studies performed on neonates and on chronic respiratory failure patients. Data extraction. Baseline characteristics, intubation rate, mortality, and hospital and ICU length of stay were extracted by trained investigators. Data synthesis. We identified 15 randomized control trials with 2,679 patients for the final analysis. The intubation rate was 109 of 945, or 11.5%, in the non-invasive ventilation group, and 158 of 1,086, or 14.5%, in the control group, with a risk ratio of 0.791 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.629 to 0.996, a p-value equal to 0.046, I-squared equal to 0, and number needed to treat equal to 31. Findings were strengthened after removing studies with intervention duration shorter than an hour and after excluding studies with crossover as rescue treatment. There was no difference in mortality and ICU and hospital length of stays. Conclusions. In pediatric patients, non-invasive ventilation applied for acute respiratory failure might reduce the intubation rate compared with standard oxygen therapy or high-flow nasal cannula. No difference in mortality was observed. Abstract 6 is a review article by Gutierrez Moreno et al. High-flow oxygen and other non-invasive respiratory support therapies in bronchiolitis. Systematic review and network meta-analysis. Objectives. We present a systematic review on the effectiveness of non-invasive respiratory support techniques in bronchiolitis. Data sources. Systematic review with pairwise meta-analyses of all studies and network meta-analyses of the clinical trials. Study selection. Patients below 24 months old with bronchiolitis who required non-invasive respiratory support were included in randomized control trials, non-randomized control trials, and cohort studies in which high-flow nasal cannula was compared with conventional low-flow oxygen therapy and/or non-invasive ventilation. Data extraction. Emergency wards and hospitalized patients with bronchiolitis. Data synthesis. A total of 3,367 patients were analyzed in 14 randomized control trials and 8,385 patients in 14 non-randomized control trials. Only in non-experimental studies, hyphonasal cannula is associated with a lower risk of invasive mechanical ventilation than non-invasive ventilation, with an odds ratio of 0.49 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.42 to 0.58, with no differences in experimental studies. There were no differences between hyphonasal cannula and non-invasive ventilation in other outcomes. High-flow nasal cannula is more effective than low-flow oxygen therapy in reducing oxygen days and treatment failure. In the network meta-analyses of clinical trials, non-invasive ventilation was the most effective intervention to avoid invasive mechanical ventilation and to reduce days on oxygen therapy, although crossover effect estimates between interventions showed no significant differences. The surface under the cumulative ranking curve for invasive mechanical ventilation was 57.03%, and the surface under the cumulative ranking curve for days on oxygen therapy was 79.42%. The included studies show methodological heterogeneity, but it is only statistically significant for the reduction of days of oxygen therapy and length of hospital stay. Conclusions. Experimental evidence does not suggest that high-flow oxygen therapy has advantages over low-flow oxygen therapy as initial treatment, nor over non-invasive ventilation as a rescue treatment. Abstract 7 is the Executive Summary Article by Ameriad et al. Executive Summary of the Second International Guidelines for the Diagnosis and Management of Pediatric Acute Respiratory Distress Syndrome, PALIC 2. Objectives. We sought to update our 2015 work in the Second Pediatric Acute Lung Injury Consensus Conference, or PALIC 2, guidelines for the diagnosis and management of pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome, considering new evidence in topic areas that were not previously addressed. Design. International Consensus Conference series involving 52 multidisciplinary international content experts in pediatric acute respiratory distress and 4 methodology experts from 15 countries using consensus conference methodology and implementation science. Setting not applicable. Patients included patients with or at risk for pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 11 subgroups conducted systematic or scoping reviews addressing 11 topic areas. 1. Definition, incidence, and epidemiology. 2. Pathobiology, severity, and risk stratification. 3. Ventilatory support. 4. Pulmonary-specific ancillary treatment. 5. Non-pulmonary treatment. 6. Monitoring. 7. Non-invasive respiratory support. 8. Extracorporeal support. 9. Morbidity and long-term outcomes. 10. Clinical informatics and data science. And 11. Resource-limited settings. The search included Medline, Embase, and CINAHL Complete EBSCOhost and was updated in March 2022. Grading of recommendations, assessment, development, and evaluation methodology was used to summarize evidence and develop the recommendations, which were discussed and voted on by all PALIC 2 experts. There were 146 recommendations and statements, including 34 recommendations for clinical practice, 112 consensus-based statements with 18 on pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome definition, 55 on good practice, 7 on policy, and 32 on research. All recommendations and statements had agreement greater than 80%. Conclusions. PALIC 2 recommendations and consensus-based statements should facilitate the implementation and adherence to the best clinical practice in patients with pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome. These results will also inform the development of future programs of research that are crucially needed to provide stronger evidence to guide the pediatric critical care teams managing these patients. Abstract 8 is an online clinical investigation by Maratra et al. Timing of Tracheostomy in Critically Ill Infants and Children with Respiratory Failure, a Pediatric Health Information System Study. Objectives. Tracheostomy placement in infants and children with respiratory failure has steadily increased over time, yet there is no consensus for optimal timing. We sought to 1. Describe tracheostomy timing and associated demographic and clinical characteristics in a large ICU cohort, and 2. Compare clinical outcomes between subgroups based on tracheostomy timing. Design. Retrospective observational study using the Pediatric Health Information System, or PHIS, database. Setting. Neonatal ICUs and PICUs in the United States. Patients. The FIZ database was queried for patients less than 18 years old who underwent tracheostomy from 2010 to 2020. Patients were included if admitted to an ICU with need for mechanical ventilation prior to tracheostomy in the same hospitalization. Patients were categorized as early tracheostomy, which occurred within the first 14 days of mechanical ventilation, late tracheostomy, which occurred within mechanical ventilation days 15 to 60, and extended tracheostomy, which occurred after mechanical ventilation day 60. Primary endpoints included demographic and clinical characteristics. Secondary endpoints included patient outcomes, in-hospital mortality, length of stay, and hospital-acquired pneumonia and hospital costs. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 16,121 patients underwent tracheostomy at 52 children's hospitals. 10,295 had complete data and were included in the analysis. Of the 10,295 patients who had tracheostomy placement, 4,006 or 39% underwent early tracheostomy, 4,159 or 40% underwent late tracheostomy, and 2,130 or 21% underwent extended tracheostomy. The majority of patients in all subgroups had complex chronic conditions. Median age was significantly different between subgroups, with early tracheostomy being the oldest, with a p-value less than 0.001. A multivariable regression analysis showed that early tracheostomy was associated with lower in-hospital mortality, shorter hospital length of stay, shorter ICU length of stay, shorter post-tracheostomy length of stay, decreased healthcare-acquired pneumonias, and lower hospital costs compared with those who underwent late tracheostomy or extended tracheostomy. The p-value for all of these associations was less than 0.001. Conclusions. In a large cohort of pediatric patients with respiratory failure, tracheostomy placement within 14 days of mechanical ventilation was associated with improved in-hospital outcomes. Early tracheostomy was independently associated with decreased mortality, length of stay, healthcare-acquired pneumonias, and hospital costs. Abstract 9 is an online neurocritical care article by Ludwig et al. Outcome measurement in children with a history of disorders of consciousness after severe brain injury. Telephone administration of the Vineland Adaptive Behavior Scales 3rd Edition and Glasgow Outcome Scale Extended Pediatric Revision. Objectives. Examine initial feasibility and utility of a battery of measures administered via telephone interview with a caregiver for describing long-term outcomes in individuals with a history of disorders of consciousness after pediatric acquired brain injury. Design. Cross-sectional study. Setting. Caregiver interview administered via telephone. Patients. Convenient sample admitted to an inpatient pediatric neurorehabilitation unit with disorders of consciousness after acquired brain injury at least 1 year prior to assessment, with an N equal to 41 and 5 to 22 years old at assessment. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The Vineland Adaptive Behavior Scales 3rd Edition, otherwise known as Vineland 3, and Glasgow Outcome Scale Extended Pediatric Revision were examined. Administration time of the Vineland 3 ranged from 13 to 101 minutes with a mean of 50, and the Glasgow Outcome Scale Extended Pediatric Revision ranged from 2 to 10 minutes with a mean of 3. Vineland 3 Adaptive Behavior Composite ranged from standard scores of 20, which was exceptionally low, to 100, which was average, and the Glasgow Outcome Scale Extended Pediatric Revision scores ranged from 3, which was upper moderate disability, to 7, which was vegetative state. Lower adaptive functioning on the Vineland 3 Adaptive Behavior Composite was strongly associated with greater disability on the Glasgow Outcome Scale Extended Pediatric Revision, with an R equal to negative 0.805. On the Vineland 3 Adaptive Behavior Composite, 19.5% earned the lowest possible score, whereas 12.2% obtained the lowest possible scores for survivors on the Glasgow Outcome Scale Extended Pediatric Revision. Only 7.3% earned lowest scores on both measures. Conclusions. The Vineland 3 and Glasgow Outcome Scale Extended Pediatric Revision were feasibly administered by telephone and were complementary in this cohort. The Glasgow Outcome Scale Extended Pediatric Revision provided a quick and easy measure of gross functional outcome, whereas the Vineland 3 took longer to administer but provided a greater level of detail about functioning. When both measures were used together, the range and variability of scores were maximized. Abstract 10 is an online review article by Lowe et al. The Use and Impact of Diaries in PICUs and Neonatal ICUs, a Scoping Review. Objective. Several studies have investigated the impact of diaries in adult ICUs, which have been used as a tool to support recall and reduce post-traumatic stress disorder in patients and their families. We conducted a scoping review to determine the definition of ICU diaries and the extent, range, and nature of research conducted on NICU and PICU diaries, describe their use and impact, as well as identify gaps in knowledge and areas for future research. Data sources. The following databases were searched from inception to March 2022. Cumulated Index to Nursing and Allied Health Literature, Cochrane Library, Embase, PubMed, and American Psychological Association Psych Info. Searches were also conducted in the following gray literature databases: Google Scholar, University of South Australia, and WorldCat. Study selection. All studies that discussed the use and impact of diaries or journals involving patients less than 18 years old in PICUs and NICUs and/or their family members were included. Data synthesis. 16 studies were identified. Most studies define diaries as daily entries written by nurses and/or family members regarding the patient's condition during their ICU admission. The majority reported that diaries were beneficial to children and their families as they helped to fill in memory gaps, provided a means to express their feelings, and served as effective health communication tools. Several gaps were identified. Extent of the use of diaries as a means of communication, the significance of diaries as a coping mechanism for bereaved parents, and the impact of PICU diaries on the children, their families, and healthcare professionals. Conclusions. There is a paucity of data on the use of NICU and PICU diaries. Nonetheless, the limited data revealed that NICU and PICU diaries were beneficial to children and their families. Our review demonstrated a heterogeneity in the terminology, content, use of photos, and the authors of the NICU and PICU diaries. Further research is needed to investigate the impact of the use of NICU and PICU diaries on patient-reported outcomes. Abstract 11 is an online review article by Zorko et al. Defining Pediatric Chronic Critical Illness, a Scoping Review. Objectives. Children with chronic critical illness are hypothesized to be a high-risk patient population with persistent multiple organ dysfunction and functional morbidities resulting in recurrent or prolonged critical care. However, it is unclear how chronic critical illness should be defined. The aim of this scoping review was to evaluate the existing literature for case definitions of pediatric chronic critical illness and case definitions of prolonged PICU admission and to explore the methodologies used to derive these definitions. Data sources. Four electronic databases, Ovid Medline, Embase, CINAHL, and Web of Science, from inception to March 3, 2021. Study selection. We included studies that provided a specific case definition for chronic critical illness or prolonged PICU admission. Crowdsourcing was used to screen citations independently and in duplicate. A machine learning algorithm was developed and validated using 6,284 citations assessed in duplicate by trained crowd reviewers. A hybrid of crowdsourcing and machine learning methods was used to complete the remaining citation screening. Data extraction. We extracted details of case definitions, study demographics, participant characteristics, and outcomes assessed. Data synthesis. 67 studies were included. 12 studies, or 18%, provided a definition for chronic critical illness that included concepts of PICU length of stay with an N equal to 12, medical complexity or chronic conditions with an N equal to 9, recurrent admissions with an N equal to 9, technology dependence with an N equal to 5, and uncertain prognosis with an N equal to 1. Definitions were commonly referenced from another source with an N equal to 6 or opinion-based with an N equal to 5. The remaining 55 studies, or 82%, provided a definition for prolonged PICU admission, most frequently greater than or equal to 14 with an N equal to 11, or greater than or equal to 28 days with an N equal to 10. Most of these definitions were derived by investigator opinion, N equal to 24, or statistical method, N equal to 18. Conclusions. Pediatric chronic critical illness has been variably defined with regard to the concepts of patient complexity and chronicity of critical illness. A consensus definition is needed to advance this emerging and important area of pediatric critical care research. Abstract 12 is an online brief report by Lillian et al. The local and systemic exposure to oxygen in children with severe bronchiolitis on invasive mechanical ventilation, a retrospective cohort study. Objectives. Oxygen supplementation is a cornerstone treatment in critically ill children with bronchiolitis in the PICU. However, potential deleterious effects of high-dose oxygen are well known. In this study, we aim to describe the pulmonary and arterial oxygen exposure over the duration of invasive mechanical ventilation in children with severe bronchiolitis. Our secondary aim was to estimate potentially avoidable exposure to high-dose oxygen in these patients. Design, retrospective cohort study. Setting, single-center tertiary care PICU. Patients, children younger than 2 years old admitted to the PICU for severe bronchiolitis receiving invasive mechanical ventilation. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Hourly measurements of FiO2 and peripheral oxygen saturation and arterial blood gas data were collected up to day 10 of invasive mechanical ventilation. A total of 24,451 hours of invasive mechanical ventilation were observed in 176 patients, with a median age of 1 month and an interquartile range of 1 to 2.3 months. The pulmonary exposure to oxygen was highest during the first day of invasive mechanical ventilation, with a median time-weighted average FiO2 of 0.46 and an interquartile range of 0.39 to 0.53, which significantly decreased over subsequent days. The arterial or systemic exposure to oxygen was relatively low. A severe hyperoxemia, defined as a time-weighted average PaO2 greater than 248 torrs or greater than 33 kilopascals, was not observed. However, overuse of oxygen was common, with 52.3% of patients, or an N of 92, having at least 1 day of possible excessive oxygen exposure, and 14.8%, or an N of 26, with severe exposure. Furthermore, higher oxygen dosages correlated with increasing overuse of oxygen, with an R repeated measures of 0.59 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.54 to 0.63. Additionally, caregivers were likely to keep FiO2 greater than or equal to 50% when peripheral oxygen saturation was greater than or equal to 97%. Conclusions: moderate to high-dose pulmonary oxygen exposure and potential overuse of oxygen were common in this cohort of severe bronchiolitis patients requiring invasive mechanical ventilation. However, this was not accompanied by a high systemic oxygen burden. Further studies are needed to determine optimal oxygenation targets to prevent overzealous use of oxygen in this vulnerable population. This concludes the abstracts for the February 2023 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.